You know, I realize that very often these old gospel hymns challenge us with the sexist language, what we perceive as sexist language, and some of the theology doesn't quite fit for us anymore. But I'll tell you, it's hard to find modern music that matches the passion and the power and the energy of some of these old gospel hymns. So I really hope that you're able to move past the bumps of the language and that sort of thing to feel the energy that and be blessed by it. Thank you, band. Very nice. Yes. Order! Order in the court! You've probably heard that in a movie or a TV show somewhere along the way. Hopefully none of you have been spent too much time in a courtroom. but we're familiar with order being wanted in the world around us. And as we look at our modern world, and I'm not really a pessimist, I'm not a doom person at all, but if you look around in our world, we find a lot of places where order is lacking. There's so much social upheaval, so much financial upheaval, so much political upheaval, so much medical upheaval going on right now. It's challenging probably more than, I know in my lifetime, to find a place of order in the midst of all of this. So we're going to take a deeper look at what order is all about today, and I hope that one of the takeaways from today will be a place where you can go and feel comfortable that order is there with you, and that you can claim that and you can experience that. To reiterate our affirmation for the month, understanding divine order, I can embrace paradox and navigate chaos while keeping my balance. Now, this is one of the words, if we often think in opposites, and being in three dimensions as we are and needing the polarity to understand things, you can't have wet without dry and cold without heat, that sort of thing. Very often the opposite of order is often thought to be chaos. And I've come to believe that may not be quite as true as we have thought, but let's take a look at chaos. If you go to your good friend Google and put in chaos, you're going to get close to 35 million hits on chaos. So somebody's interested in it. Now, I remind you that the number of hits you get on Google doesn't necessarily mean that the topic is good or bad or right or wrong or anything else. It just gives you an idea about how many people are investigating. And there are a few folks who are looking into this idea of chaos. Chaos means complete disorder, confusion, disarray, disorganization, mayhem, bedlam, pandemonium, madness, havoc, turmoil, tumult, commotion, disruption, upheaval, furor, frenzy, uproar, and I could go on and on. You get the idea. That's the way we usually perceive what chaos is all about. Now, we can look at chaos as many things from two particular perspectives. One is the physical, and the other is the metaphysical. In the physical side, in the three-dimensional side, there's a whole branch of science that studies chaos. And one of the things that have captivated scientists for quite some time is what we've called chaos theory. And I'm going to say a little bit more about that in just a minute. But it came to me as I was studying this that this parallels another idea that we kind of struggle with in our everyday human lives, and that is of ego. You know, you hear people talking about doing away with the ego or conquering the ego or beating the ego down, and I just don't agree with that at all. I think the ego has its place. Now, any of you who've had children know about the terrible twos and horrible threes and that sort of thing. You have challenges when you're raising children, but you don't throw them away. You find a way to get through that. And so is it with chaos. Chaos and ego are not things that we try to get rid of that we want to throw away, but something that we want to learn to use in a maximal way in our everyday lives. Ego is a great servant. It's a lousy master, though. And so is it when we think about chaos. Chaos is not something that we necessarily have to run away from or avoid or try to do away with, but to put it in its place. It can be interesting and even useful in its place when we see it correctly from our perspective. Now, it's been said that our task is not to bring order out of chaos, but to get work done in the midst of chaos. Now, you can spend your whole life every minute of every 24-hour day trying to do away with chaos. And are you going to succeed? I don't think so. So the prudent thing for us to do then is to say, let me bring all of my spiritual tools into play here. Let me use them. We're spending this whole year talking about our 12 powers. these faculties, these spiritual faculties that we have to be manifesting ourselves out in the world. We can use each one of these 12 powers in addressing this idea of chaos. So when we are able in our spiritual understanding, in our spiritual growth, to come to a place that we understand chaos properly and we understand order properly, then we can live in the midst of the chaos and don't have to run from it, don't have to hide from it, don't try to destroy it, but learn how to live in the midst of it as masters of that. I always go back to that idea that we get from creation when God created Adam and Eve. He told them to go and have dominion over the earth, which means that the power that they had within them was greater, the spiritual power they had was greater than any physical three-dimensional power in the world, including chaos. So when we learn how to live, how to express the deep truth of our spiritual beingness in the midst of that chaos, then we aren't victims of it. We don't have to be subject to it. It is subject to us, which is a quite different way to live. Now, what if underneath what we call chaos, there is order always there? We tend to think if chaos is present, then order is out the window. It's gone. It's kind of like peace. We think, you know, if there's conflict present, then peace is nowhere to be found. But peace is always with us. Peace is a perspective. It's not a thing. It's a way of looking at things. So in the midst of the most horrible unrest, peace can still be present in us, and so is it with order and chaos. In the midst of what we would consider totally chaotic, something that's totally unbearable for us, what if order still exists on another level at the same time that apparent chaos is raging all around us? And indeed, a scientist said, chaos theory simply suggests that what appears to most people as chaos is not really chaotic, but a series of different types of orders with which the human mind has not yet become familiar. So what if chaos is not the horrible thing that we originally thought it was, or were taught to think that it was? What if we were able to shift our thinking in a spiritual direction and to be able to perceive it in such a way that chaos becomes a part of our world, and again, it's something that we are in control of as we perceive it? Would that change things around a little bit? Would that change how you feel about when you get up to go somewhere out of your house wondering what you're going to see out in the chaotic world? When you begin a project, when you try to make something happen out in the world and you're faced with this chaos, does it mean you have to cower and be afraid and be pessimistic about whether this is going to work or not? I think the spiritual truth is we don't have to be that way. We can bring our spiritual beingness to the surface, to the forefront, and address chaos in that way. That's why we can use that affirmation. I can embrace paradox and navigate chaos while keeping my balance. This is what's possible for us. Now, the daily word that Dina read for us so wonderfully a moment ago had in it a passage of scripture that came from what I can tell, it came from the King James Version of the Bible. How many of you grew up with the King James Version? Yeah. A lot of times when I'm doing biblical scriptural research, I have to go and find the scripture in the King James Version and then translate it over to one of the other versions that I use most often, because I've memorized so many of those passages in King James, and they get changed in the newer versions and don't have the same word. So when you're searching for a word, I have to go back to the King James Version to get that. However, we know that the King James Version is not wrong, but it's inaccurate. It's not historically accurate and textually accurate. That passage from Romans 8:28 in the King James Version says, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose." Now, I would challenge you, but don't ever do it. I challenge you to go up to somebody who's just had a terrible experience in their life, some kind of terrible traumatic experience, and say, "Okay, this is working for your good. This pain that you're going through right now is working for your good. The way your friend stabbed you in the back, that's working for your good." Just imagine it. Don't do it, please. Because when I used to read that, I think, all things aren't working for my good. There's some horrible things going on in my life right now, and I can't see a bit of good in it. So for somebody to tell me that this is good and it's working for my good, that's a word that I won't use in church. that's just not right. And then, through doing scriptural study, I found out that that translation is just a little bit skewed. In the New International Version, we find that passage, Romans 8:28, translated like this: "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose." Not that all things work for good, but in all things God is working for our good. Now, I can get behind that. I can go to sleep with that in my mind and rest real peacefully, knowing that in all things, the most terrible thing in the world happening, God is working behind the scenes and underneath it for my good. The thing may not be serving any good purpose for me at all. The thing may be very painful and unpleasant and traumatic, but in that situation, in the chaos, God is working for our good. Spirit is always working for our good to make it right for us. In Genesis chapter 50, you remember the story of Joseph when he was kidnapped by his brothers and sold into slavery down in Egypt. And as he rose up to be a great ruler in Egypt, he was saying to his brothers, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done. What you did to me was not good for me, but God was working in that to make something good happen." That changes things all around. Because there's so many times when we can't see any good in the situations in front of us, but I can now see that behind the scenes and underneath things, God's Spirit is constantly working to make that to my good. And I remember going through some challenging times in church years ago. You know, the things you love can hurt you so much more than the things you don't. And when you get hurt in church, it's even twice as many times worse than what happens out in the world. I'd been through one of those experiences, and I found myself using this mantra: this will be for good. This will be for good. It hurt too bad not to make something out of it. And I went back again and again to that belief that behind the scenes and underneath, in all things, in the midst of this chaos, in the midst of this pain, in the midst of this betrayal, in the midst of this trauma, Spirit is working for my good. That I can get behind. That I can take with me every day, everywhere I go. So that's the one thing that we can look at, that even though somebody intends to harm you, God is working, even in the midst of that action, for your good. If it's possible at all for some kind of good to come out of this, Spirit will make it happen. Spirit will set it up. Now, it's also important that we are ready for that, that we are spiritually aware enough to see it. Have you ever been, well, one illustration I often use, and I've heard women use childbirth in this context, but I used to have migraine headaches a long time ago. And, you know, you just want to die. Even today, somebody comes up and says, "Oh, I've got a migraine today, and I want to stick my finger in their eye." I said, "No, you don't have a migraine. If you can talk that glibly about it, you don't have a migraine. Unless you want to die, you don't have a migraine." Anybody know that experience? Yeah, uh-huh. Well, that experience of having that migraine was so incredible. It consumed me. There was nothing but the pain. Nothing else in the world mattered. I don't care. Burn my house down. It doesn't really matter. One of the ways I learned to deal with it is I imagined that there was this gigantic boombox in front of me playing this painfully loud hard rock music. And that was the pain of the headache. And there was a great big volume dial about this big around up here. And I'd go click, click, click. One little click at a time, turning down the sound of that boombox, turning down the pain. And I could regulate it where I could be human, feel human while I was having it, but I could never quite make it go completely away, but I could certainly make a difference. But there are those experiences that we have in the world in the midst of the chaos that simply consume us. It takes all of our energy, takes all of our creativity, takes all of our willingness to do anything at all. When we see those things differently, when we see those things, when we experience those things, that pain, that trauma, and we know, as the scripture says, and we know that in this thing, Spirit is working for my good, it makes a difference in how I perceive it. It makes a difference in how I experience it. It makes a difference in my response to it. So instead of curling up in the fetal position in the middle of my bed, as I used to do with the migraine headaches, we can be up and doing something about it and not being captivated, not being victimized, not being kidnapped by the trauma, the experiences that go on out in the world, because we know in all things, in every situation, no matter how painful, no matter how traumatic, no matter how confusing, no matter how frightening, in every situation, Spirit is working. Now, we aren't always aware of that. We are such sensual beings. We want gratification right now. You know, if I have something, I want to see it, I want to touch it, I want to feel it, I want to use it. Just knowing I have it somewhere else is not enough. But when Spirit is working, it's very often on such a subtle level that our humanists can't even pick it up. So I trust that whether I know Spirit is moving or not, I operate under that assumption. You know, there are times when I feel so full of Spirit that I'm going to burst out of my skin. And that's wonderful. It's amazing when those kinds of experiences come along. And you know, sometimes I feel just as dead as a rotten log. I may burst your bubble here about what spirituality is all about. But there are times when I don't feel spiritual at all. And I used to beat myself up for that. I used to think something's wrong with me, something horrible's going on here. And now I just say, there it is. Even in this experience where I don't feel spiritual at all, Spirit is still working for my good. Spirit is still in operation. Even though I don't feel it, I don't see it, there's no indication, no proof of it, I know that in this situation, Spirit is working. So when those days come along when I don't give you a happy rip about anything, I just say, okay, that's the way I feel. I'm going to go walking in the woods because I know I can't do any worthwhile work during that time. Hard to be inspired when you feel kind of dead on the inside, right? So I go out walking or doing something like that, and in a while it passes, and I'm back to work again. What makes that possible, rather than curling up in a fetal ball or giving up or running away or trying to hide or screaming or whatever else you might want to do, knowing that in this situation, as uncomfortable as it is, as frightening as it is, Spirit is working for my good every second of that experience. And I can relax and I can let go of demanding about knowing why or knowing how. I don't know those things, but I do know, I do believe, I claim that Spirit is working for my good in every one of those situations that come along. So we can take this affirmation that we have today, understanding divine order, I can embrace paradox and navigate chaos while keeping my balance. We can make that real. So in this coming week, I challenge you. You're going to face something that challenges you. You're going to face something traumatic. You're going to face something disappointing. You're going to face something that challenges you, that gets in your way, that interferes with you doing what you want to do. I invite you to take a moment, take a breath, and say, in this situation, Spirit is working for my good. I may not sense it, I may not be able to see it, but I claim that that's the absolute truth. In every situation, Spirit is working for my good. The situation may not work for my good. It may be a horrible, scarring kind of experience, but in that situation, Spirit is working nonstop for our good. And if you will remind yourself of that as often as you bump up against something, it'll make a world of difference in how you experience that thing and how you respond to it. You can respond with power and with truth and understanding and all these 12 powers that we've talked about so far this year, engaging each one of those and putting that out into the world. And then you can be the manifestors that you were meant to be. I say this over and over again, but I believe the primary characteristic of Spirit, of God, is that of Creator. And Scriptures say we were created how? In the image and the likeness of Spirit. So if the primary characteristic of Spirit is Creator, then it stands to logic and reason that my primary characteristic is that of Creator as well. So when I claim this promise that in all things Spirit is working for my good, I can go ahead and manifest. Even in the midst of pain, even in the midst of trauma, even in the midst of confusion, when everybody else is running around with chickens like their heads cut off, I don't have to be there. I can be centered, I can be focused, and I can know that absolute truth that in every situation, Spirit is working for my good. Now, did you get the takeaway? In every situation, Spirit is working for my good. in every situation, Spirit is working for my good. And one more time, in every situation, Spirit is working for my good. God bless you, my friends.
And now is our opportunity to give back. We thank you all for your generous offerings, your tithes, keeping everything in here in order, the lights on, everything running, and even with those unexpected things, those perceived chaos, there was a naturally occurring skylight forming in Reverend Lawrence's office this morning, and it's always good to know that we are backed up in service by Jim Anderson, who shows up at a drop, and Peggy and John Guerin on live stream. We thank you how you show up, how you serve, and how you give to us in a variety of ways. If you're watching us online, you're going to see, you're going to see the various ways that you can donate to us. We have a donate button on our website. There's also opportunities if you buy from Amazon, you could sign up at no cost to you to Amazon Smile, and they give a portion of your purchases over to us as a nonprofit. So we thank you for that. If you have a gift with you today and you would like to hold it in your hand, please do so now as we say the blessing together. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today, we let go of any concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. And ever-increasing good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good, we feel it, we experience it, we freely give it, and it multiplies itself around us, and so it is. Amen.